So good morning, everybody. Let's start immediately with the important news of the day, Ebola in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. We have the pleasure to have here today with us Mr. Peter Salama, who is WHO Deputy Director General, Emergency Preparedness and Response. And I'll give Dr. Salama immediately the floor. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. A real pleasure to be here and to brief you on this very important event that has been confirmed this week. By way of background, on May the 3rd, WHO was notified by the Ministry of Health of the Democratic Republic of Congo of a cluster of suspicious cases and deaths in northwest Congo in the Equator province, centered on the town of Bikoro. On May the 5th, an investigation team jointly made up of WHO and the Ministry of Health took five samples and brought them to the lab on May the 6th at the central level in Kinshasa. On May the 8th, WHO was notified by the central laboratory and the Ministry of Health that two of the five samples had tested positive for Ebola virus disease. When we look back on all the previous cases from April 4th to May 9th, we estimate now that there were 32 suspected, probable, or confirmed cases, two with lab confirmation, 18 probable, including the deaths, and 12 suspected. You may note that the Ministry of Health has released slightly different numbers as of yesterday. The reason for that is that they've chosen to use March 8th as a cutoff, so they're starting their count from May 8th. From May 8th. So they've chosen a more recent cutoff to begin the case count. Of course, as usual, these patients presented with fever, abdominal pain, myalgia, arthralgia, and importantly, many presented with symptoms of bleeding. Just to give you a sense of the logistics of this area of the world, the health facility which has been the focus in a place called Ikoko Impenge is around 280 kilometers from the closest regional capital of Equator province, which is Bandaka. It's 30 kilometers from a small town called Bikoro. In terms of the response to date, WHO has a team on the ground along with MSF. We are surging up an additional team of between 20 and 40 specialists in epidemiology, logistics, social mobilization, contact tracing, and vaccination programs. We've deployed personal protective equipment to the ground, and we should have up and running by this weekend a mobile laboratory on site. Access is extremely difficult, as I mentioned. It's basically 15 hours by motorbike from the closest town, and we are discussing now with the World Food Programme the possibility of an air bridge, because we will need helicopter support, and we're also looking at potentially clearing the runway in Bikoro so we have better access. In terms of the plan, it covers the pillars of an Ebola response, focus initially on surveillance and understanding the extent of this outbreak, a focus on safe burials, a focus on case management, and a focus on preparing for any public health measures that are deemed necessary, such as vaccination. This plan is being coordinated very carefully with our key partners, Médecins Sans Frontières, the International Federation of the Red Cross, UNICEF, and the World Food Programme. We have also released $1 million from our contingency fund on the same day as the outbreak was confirmed and declared on Tuesday, and with thanks to the Wellcome Trust and DFID for that response. Why are we concerned about this outbreak? Well, of course, this is a deadly disease. You're all aware of it. It has a case fatality that ranges from 20% to up to 90%. So it's one of our most deadly of deadly high-threat pathogens. We also know that we have some issues that are concerning us in terms of the potential for this outbreak to amplify. Even though it's a remote rural area, which is usually gives us a sense of reassurance in terms of spread of an outbreak, the problem here is that we already have three separate locations that are reporting cases that cover as much as 60 kilometres and maybe more. We have three healthcare workers infected and one who've been reported as of yesterday as having died. And we know that healthcare workers can really be an amplification factor for these kinds of outbreaks. And we know the number of suspected, probable, and confirmed cases is significant. So we are very concerned and we are planning for all scenarios, including the worst case scenario. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Dr. Salama. I will give now the floor to our two other colleagues who would like to brief on this subject. Let's start with Jens.
Yes, thank you very much, and good morning. I just wanted to add that, as we've heard, that there are several UN organizations supporting the response to this, and the Emergency Relief Coordinator, Mark Lowcock, has announced an immediate $2 million allocation from the Central Emergency Response Fund to help the partners in the DRC to fight and contain this Ebola virus disease outbreak. The urgent activities that will be supported include critical health actions such as surveillance, treatment, community mobilization and sensitization, safe and dignified burials, and supporting logistics services. Mr. Lowcock said when he allocated this the following: we know that coordinated early response will be critical containing this outbreak. This Central Emergency Response Fund allocation will help our humanitarian partners to deliver vital services to people in affected communities and to stop the spread of the virus. Thank you.
And let's close with Christophe for UNICEF.
Bonjour. I just wanted to add on UNICEF response. UNICEF has mobilized its team to help contain the spread of the disease. A UNICEF team has, with two doctors, a specialist in water sanitation and hygiene, as well as a specialist in community communication, left yesterday from Bandaka to assess the extent of the epidemic and begin implementing the response alongside the government and the World Health Organization. We are focusing our response on communication activities in the communities to protect people from the disease and on water supply, hygiene and sanitation to prevent the spread of the disease. We have already sent chlorine sprays, soap, water purification tablet to the area, as well as thousands of posters and leaflets to sensitize the communities. And we will be working closely with the government and our partners to control the outbreak. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'll open the floor to questions. Lionel, can you introduce yourself for Dr. Salama, please?
Lionel Faton, here, Japanese news agency. First, can you... C'est bon? Can you repeat the number of cases and do it slowly because it's Friday morning and so... And... ouais, en plus, c'est dur. And then the question will be, have you identified the type of Ebola, meaning is it Zaire? And if I understood correctly, the Ebola Zaire is the more lethal, right? This is the one close to 90% of fatality rate. Is it right?
So just to speak slowly, I've been up since early in the morning working on this. There's 32 cases in total. Two cases have been confirmed by the laboratory. 18 cases are what we call probable cases with a defined epidemiological link to other cases. And 12 cases suspect cases, so a total of 32. As I said earlier, you'll see a different number from a publication of the Ministry of Health yesterday, which is 11, and that's because they've chosen to take May the 8th as their starting date, whereas we've gone back to what we think are very probable cases going back into April. In terms of the virus, yes, it is indeed Ebola virus Zaire. A caveat on the case fatality rates, a lot depends on the quality of the treatment. So yes, it's a highly lethal disease, up to 90% case fatality rate, but we know we can get significantly lower than that with early isolation, good rehydration, both oral and intravenous, as well as potentially newer therapies.
Stefan.
Yes, Stéphane Bissard, Le Temps newspaper. As far as the health infrastructure in this region, I guess it's pretty dire. And if you could comment on that. And my second question, how different is WHO's response compared to what happened in 2014? Thank you.
So it is absolutely a dire scene in terms of infrastructure. There are very few paved roads, very little electrification, very poor water and sanitation. And as I mentioned, the only way we'll mount a serious response in this outbreak is through an air bridge. Just to give you a sense, we're talking about an area that's 280 kilometers even from the provincial capital of Ecuador. So it's going to be extremely challenging in terms of the response. So we need to make sure everyone's aware this is going to be tough and it's going to be costly to stamp out this outbreak. In terms of the change in response, well, I welcome you to ask other partners as well as WHO, because clearly we'll give you one impression. But just to give you a sense that this outbreak was officially declared by the government on Tuesday morning. Within an hour, we had a full standing up of our emergency management team at all levels of the organisation. We are in full surge capacity now. We have transmitted to the country office and to the partners $1 million within the space of a few hours to initiate the response. The outbreak was declared the same day. The response plan is available and all partners have been coordinated through WHO. The SG Secretary General's office has been contacted, as is the ERC, to put all agencies on standby to support further. We've received great support already from MSF, from UNICEF, from the World Food Programme, who are offering us helicopters, and from the IFRC, who are generally take responsibility for the safe burial component of Ebola response. So remembering that this was confirmed on Tuesday and we're talking about 72 hours later, I think it's a very different response from ever previously. The Director General himself has spoken with the DRC authorities and raised his concerns. The Minister of Health is also extremely concerned, especially with the news about the infection of the health workers. And so at all levels, this has been taken as the highest priority.
Marta.
Yes, UNICEF talk about communication. Marta Hurtado, Spanish news agency. Talk about communications and talking with the community. WHO is doing the same, or MSF, having in mind that last time it took 4 or 5 months to realize that you need anthropologists and social workers to explain to the community the safe burials and touching and washing and all this stuff. And then do you have a clue, an idea, what it came from, like, again, eating bushmeat? Thank you.
So on your last question, at this stage, it's too early to say even what the index case, the first case was, let alone the exposure that has caused this outbreak. We know it's generally from contact with wild animals, and we suspect, again, that that will be the likely scenario in terms of what started this outbreak. But we have no details yet, and that's one of the reasons why we have our field epidemiologists in the team to really understand the origins, but also the extent of the outbreak, which is really going to be required also if we conduct vaccination campaigns, as we may wish to in the coming days to weeks, because we'll need to have a very good sense of every case and every contact with a case in order to do those campaigns effectively. So this basic understanding of the data and epidemiology is absolutely the first thing we need to do, and that's why we've got a team of 20 to 40 people arriving along with all of the other partners in the next 24 to 48 hours to support the in-country and in-field team who are there already. You're quite right to point to one of the biggest lessons learned from the Ebola outbreak of 2014 to 16 was the need to early on engage the community, but engage them in the right way. And certainly we're heavily reliant on our partners such as UNICEF, such as the International Federation of the Red Cross, to really ensure that we get those messages right and we disseminate them right. So as WHO, we provide the technical evidence, the key technical messages, and then in our partnership with UNICEF and IFRC, they help disseminate those messages through local radio, in local languages, and we've already produced, by the way, some technical materials in the local language of that area, again, learning from previous responses. So I think we've started well, and now we need to continue well, and we'll need the support of the entire international community for this response, because as I mentioned, this is going to be tough and it's going to be costly.
Is it Gavi involved in the vaccination campaigns you are planning?
Yeah. So again, there's been no formal decision yet made by the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo to trigger the vaccination. However, we are putting everything in place to be prepared to do that in case, one, we get authorization from the government, and two, it's needed. remembering everyone that this is an experimental vaccine. This is not a licensed product, and there are a lot of complications with using an experimental vaccine, which requires to be kept in the long term at between negative 60 and negative 80 degrees Celsius. So this is not a simple logistical effort. It's not like doing a polio campaign with oral polio vaccine where we get it immediately out to the field. This is a highly complex, sophisticated operation in one of the most difficult terrains on Earth. So we're not taking that lightly. We're going to need a huge amount of people to do that. Fortunately, Gavi has agreed to fund that campaign if indeed we go ahead. And that's very welcome news from Gavi, who supports the Ebola stockpile, some of which is here in Geneva, by the way. And already we are mobilizing the cold chain requirements to be there as early as the weekend.
I've got Nina and then Tom.
Hi, over here. Nina Larson, hi, from AFP. So I was wondering, you mentioned the air bridge, when you think that could get started. And I was also wondering, this area, which sounds like it's very remote, how many people are at risk here? Do you see a risk of widespread spread of this? And because you were talking about worst case scenario, could you tell us what that is? Thank you.
Yeah, so it's an extremely difficult logistic area of the country. We believe in our discussions with WFP, which are advancing very quickly, that we'll be able to mobilize the UN Humanitarian Air Service, known as UNHAS, for DRC, which means we should have helicopters available as of the weekend. And we're finalizing that agreement as we speak. The issue of small planes and aircraft is going to be important because, as you're aware, helicopters can only take a certain payload in terms of supplies and logistics. And here we're talking about hundreds of kits for personal protective equipment. We're talking about international emergency health kits and things that will require more than helicopter support. That's going to be heavily contingent upon the clearance of the airstrip in Bikoro. So at the moment, it cannot take even a small aircraft to land, but we're discussing with the WFP and the UN country team how quickly we could clear that airstrip to make it available to support the logistics of this response. Otherwise, at the moment, we're talking about getting there by motorbike, which is obviously not the ideal way to respond to a massive outbreak such as this one. So it's going to be extremely challenging, as I mentioned, and very costly, including the air bridge. In terms of potential spread, so two elements to that response. There is the near-term spread that we're concerned about, including to the provincial capital known as Bandaka. That's a town with, in the environment of 1 million inhabitants, that's only a few hours away from Bikoro. So that's the immediate risk. If we see a town of that size infected with Ebola, then we're going to have a major urban outbreak, which is going to be a real challenge in order to respond. As we saw in Ebola West Africa, once Ebola gets into urban areas, especially poor urban slums, it's extremely difficult to get rid of the disease, much more difficult than in isolated rural areas. So that's the first risk, and we've rated that as of yesterday in our disease outbreak news, which is a public document you can all have access to, as moderate for the country. The other secondary set of risks of amplification are the regional countries. So we've already put on high alert the surrounding nine countries. And of those surrounding nine countries, which are already being prepared through the WHO offices with the Ministry of Health in those surrounding nine countries, we're particularly concerned about Congo-Brazzaville, the Republic of Congo, which is, of course, just across the river. And we're very concerned as well about the Central African Republic, which, as you know, has also tributaries, connections through the river system with DRC. They're the immediate risks. We're putting those countries on high alert. We're supporting them with both equipment and personnel to be ready for any international spread. As of yesterday, we still rated that international spread as low risk, but we'll be reassessing that on a daily basis as we get more information about the cases themselves and the location of the cases.
Tom.
Tom Miles from Reuters News Agency. First of all, thank you very much for coming to talk to us and telling us about this. It's highly appreciated. Some of my questions have been answered already, but I have a couple of things still. When might you get a vaccine decision? And if this has been around, we think, since January in the region, why was it not notified sooner? And can you tell us something about the local, if you know, about the sort of local customs or traditions like, you know, burials? I mean, is this a factor, as we know from the big outbreak a couple of years ago, this was a major factor? Thanks.
So important questions, and really for the record, let me state very clearly that the first lab confirmation, as I mentioned, of the Ebola outbreak occurred on May the 8th. So prior to that, there has been no lab-confirmed cases that we're aware of Ebola in the recent weeks to months. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we do suspect that for periods in April, there were cases that have now an epidemiological link to what we believe are confirmed cases. So in all likelihood, the outbreak was occurring unbeknownst to the authorities during the course of April. Now, you refer as well to a report of a distinct outbreak that the Ministry of Health had discussed in a coordination meeting in the last couple of days in Kinshasa. That was an outbreak that was of 15 patients, including 8 deaths that occurred indeed in January and February in a very similar overlapping geographical area of DRC. At this stage, we have no information to suggest, and we believe there were 2 lab samples taken during the course of that investigation that were negative for Ebola. The confusion has occurred because some of the symptoms of that disease are nonspecific, remembering that in DRC, there are literally hundreds of outbreaks that have non-specific symptoms that can overlap with the clinical profile of Ebola virus disease on any given year. So at this point, we cannot make any epidemiological link between the 15 cases that occurred in January and February, with the last death being in mid-February, and this outbreak, which was confirmed finally on May the 8th. So at this point, we cannot make that link and that connection, and I would advise you until there's any further evidence not to create that linkage in the minds of the public, because there's no evidence behind it.
And the issue of the traditional
burial? Yes. So on your second question, 2 important points. There is certainly some overlap with behavioral practices in DRC and what we saw in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone in the Ebola outbreak of 2014-16. Obviously, there are also some differences. These are very different ethnic populations. But certainly 2 things in common: the issue of communal burials, where lots of people come to burials and there's close contact with the deceased, and the issue of traditional healing practices and the role of traditional health workers are very much in common, and we know from previous outbreaks that both of those issues can very much amplify and cause what we call super spreading of the disease. So the 2 issues that very much we'll have to address in the response in DRC.
I'll take a last question.
When might you take a decision on the vaccine?
Oh, yeah.
So really that's in the hands of the DRC government. When we discussed with the Minister of Health yesterday with the Director General and myself, it seemed that the government is actively exploring the use of the vaccine, and we're waiting for final authorization. I expect to receive that in the coming days. And in the meantime, we are preparing as if it will be a green light. So cold chain is on standby. The stockpile is on standby. The teams are being put on standby, including up to 40 people that conducted the initial ring vaccination trial in Guinea. So people with real experience from Guinea who were involved in that trial are on standby now, and we're discussing with the Guinean government their immediate release to support this response, because there aren't many people with experience of utilizing this vaccine under field conditions. So all of the preparations are being put in place. As soon as we have the green light, we'll go for it.
So sorry, just to say that again, you're hoping to get the green light in the next few days for vaccine?
Correct.
Go ahead.
Okay, just a short follow-up.
Just 1 second, Martha. I've got Nina, Agnes, and then Marina, you also want to speak after your colleague? Yes. And then Martha, short thing, please. And then we close because we have many more issues. Agnes, start.
Yes, about the alert you sent to other countries, the high alert, is it for the 9 countries or 2 of the 9s? And who is going to give you the authorization for the vaccines? And where can we receive this document, please? Or where we can find it?
So I'm referring to the document called the Disease Outbreak News. We'll make sure you can have the link. It's a public document and available to you. So what I mentioned was that there are 9 countries which we view as at risk of potential spread of this disease. Overall, our assessment is that risk is still low risk for regional and international spread. And you'll see that wording, which is quite carefully worded, in the Disease Outbreak News document. However, we know amongst those 9 countries, 2 countries have in all likelihood a slightly higher risk because they have river connections and waterway connections directly with the DRC. And that's the Republic of Congo, Congo Brazzaville, and it's the Central African Republic. We are waiting for authorization from the Ministry of Health of the Democratic Republic of Congo for the use of the vaccine, because remember, this is an unlicensed product and we'll be using it under experimental protocols, what are called compassionate use protocols.
Marina.
Reuters. Yes, you mentioned the situation of the health structure in the country. We also know that in DRC currently there are several internal crises throughout the country. And in some places, the health situation of people is very dire. People are very weak. So I would like to know if it's happening in a region where people are already weakened by the ongoing context in Congo, and if this could further spread the outbreak.
Yeah, it's a very important question. So DRC is obviously a country that's had multiple crises, has ongoing multiple crises, has had many outbreaks, including cholera in recent months that we've been responding to, is at risk of yellow fever and many other very serious diseases. And that's apart from the bread and butter, both communicable and non-communicable diseases that the population is dying from, particularly women and children, diarrhea, pneumonia, and vaccine-preventable diseases. So this is one problem overlaid on many other problems, and not least the consequences of conflict and population displacement. So this region of DRC suffers from many of the infrastructural and low-resource constraints of the rest of DRC. It's, as I said, particularly rural, particularly logistically difficult. The health facilities are in a particularly poor state in terms of infrastructure. So it basically has a lot of background disease burden that definitely complicates this matter, and very poor infrastructure, both human and financial. Can potentially the conflict and the other issues of population displacement in DRC amplify the outbreak if it spreads beyond this area of the country? The answer is yes.
And very last follow-up from Marta.
Yes, I assume before with your answer that they were as well washing and kissing and hugging the body, but like Tom asked a question, I want to be sure, like, are they doing exactly the same like in the West Africa, the one the person is dead, they wash it, they hug, they kiss, so it's possible to spread.
Yeah. I'll ask my colleague Pierre Fremonti if he wants to comment in more detail on the behavioral practices that we know of already. Pierre is our lead Ebola expert in WHO.
If you don't mind to take one mic.
The question, Pierre, is about what we know specifically about the burial practices in this part of DRC beyond the generic.
Okay, so just to also inform you, several anthropologists are already deployed by several agencies, IFRC, MSF, I think UNICEF also, you are deploying an anthropologist, and WHO as well. So the anthropologists are really with the first wave this time. The behavior is the same like in many countries, in Central Africa. We have different ethnic groups in this place, including pygmies. And we know that we have to be very careful with all that. So we are at work, notably for the burial procedures. But yes, it include cleaning the body, it include large ceremony with all the family, etc. So that was also mentioned by Pete, that in the cases that we have today, we know that they have been transmission during funeral already. So this is something that we are paying a lot of attention to.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank all the colleagues.
Excuse me, Alexandra, just a very short question. You were talking about vaccine stockpiles in standby in Geneva. Did I get that right?
Correct. Part of the stockpile is in Geneva, and it's ready to be deployed.
Okay. Thank you very much to everybody.